Well, welcome to the Repos and Non-League show, and really pleased to say that I was so close to getting our sponsor on tonight, and but instead he sent me the manager, the man, the myth, Marcel. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
And of course, we've got assistant manager down at Barkingham Port. How are you, sir?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. And of course, we leave him till last, but only because this is the only time I can get a word in. And that's because we've got the living legend himself, the man that has got more magic tricks than Paul Daniels, Mr. Craig Edwards, of course, manager now of Barking. How are we, mate?
Fantastic. Thanks, Dave.
So, guys, I mean, I've got to ask you certain things over the weekend. I mean, we've just started another new podcast called Respect the Whistle, and on there with Martin Underhay, of course, a referee down in the Dorset area, and he's was looking at some of the rules for next year. But how, one of the rules that we were discussing on Friday night was this new rule around the goalkeepers and the I think it's 10 seconds, 8 seconds, whatever they're going to get, and then it goes to a corner if you get rid of it. Do you think it's going to be carnage? Because Martin thought it was going to be carnage. Maybe at non-league level, possibly. You can imagine it in youth level when a dad's refereeing the game and they're 1-0 down, and all of a sudden, he's counting out very, very quickly so he can get a corner, or very, very slowly to stop him getting a corner. Do you think it's going to be a little bit carnage the first sort of few months of the season, Marcel?
I mean, it all depends on the strength and the management of the game by the referee. I think if the referees strongly and start awarding corners and so on, I think if they do it consistently, the players, particularly the goalkeepers, will learn to respect the rule because conceding a corner can be quite costly. I mean, I'm all for it. Anything that encourages more play time, I'm all for it. So, it's one thing saying that we're going to bring these rules in, is another thing giving the referees the confidence to actually apply the rules consistently. And if the referees do it well enough, I can see this being an effective intervention.
What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, I think similar like when the sin bin first came in, I think it was used quite a lot at the start. I think now you don't see that many sin bins. So I think the players kind of know now if they do sort of back chat, they're going to be sort of penalised with 10 minutes off the pitch. So I think hopefully it might be the same. Like I say, it'd be a bit chaotic the first few weeks of the season. Loads of corners being given for keepers taking their time, especially in the dying minutes of the game. But I think as the season goes on, it maybe should die out if players get used to
Craig, what do you think, mate?
I think it'd be great. There's nothing I find more frustrating than you're 1-0 down, you're chasing a game and the keeper just holding on to the ball for 15, 20 seconds, and it'll stop that, and it'd be double-edged because, as Marcel said, a corner, if you're 1-0 up and you're playing for time and you're wasting time, the last thing you're going to want to do is give a corner away. And you can imagine, like, that as soon as a keeper picks the ball up there, the crowd are going to be one, two. So, it won't be all on the referee, because I'll tell you, they start getting to five or six, that keeper will soon release the ball.
Do you not think the old playing out from the back might go down, might go down the toilet next year, because that keeper's just going to get hold of it and pick it up, and then, as you say, all of a sudden he hasn't got a clue how many seconds have gone past, and all of a sudden he's just going to launch it,
Yeah,
hasn't he?
but it's if it like Marcel said, if it's more playing time and it stops people wasting time, because it is frustrating, and we all do it to a degree. When you're hanging on or it's really tight, but by and large, I think it's got to be good for the game.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I agree.
While I've got the chance, because I see the boss, he's actually watching, so it gives me a great chance to just turn around and say a massive thank you to Paul, called Paul Lansdale, and Repos for all of their cup, all of their help with his show, because they've been absolutely fantastic to me over the last 5, 6 years with his sponsorship. And I just want to say a massive thank you to Repos, and a massive thank you to Paul for everything that he does. So thanks very much, mate, and hopefully it will continue. But He's just what's he like? What's it, Marcel? Let's start with 7-8. What is Paul like as a chairman?
I think some of the attributes, though, the feedback that I was given before went into all the, all the personality traits that I was told that they all turn out to be true. Thing that stood out the most for me is his experience. And I remember when we first started the season, there was a point at the beginning of the season where we weren't doing so well. And I think that's when you really notice the importance of the experienced chairman, just the little interventions that they do with you as a manager, really calmed me down at the time and gave me the stability and the time that I needed. And now, truth be told, I remember a specific game at home losing quite heavily, and just it was no more than 30 seconds long intervention. Pulled me to the side, said a couple of words. I'm even happy to share the words, but they were just so powerful to me. He just said that in this club, we don't say bye to the managers. We just say what you need. So keep going. And if we reach a situation where we have to say that, we'll have that conversation. What else do you need? And I think from then onwards, I went home. We decided to stick with the team, and we wanted a really good run. And we went from a team that could potentially get relegated to a team that we are now here aspiring to make the playoffs. So I think that experience of the chairman is really, really important when you work in a long-term project like where we are here at the moment at 7-0. So that's what stood out to me. In terms of as a character, Paul possesses all the gentleman characteristics that really fit my personality. So I think. But for both parties, it's been a good merging so far.
So talking about playoffs, I mean, sitting there in eighth, just well, 10 points away, 5 games to play. Still confident you can get there?
I think if the result is bad, they've gone a little bit more our way, potentially, just because of the fact that we've still got to play the team that's sitting on a fifth spot. But from our perspective, the fact that we're still talking of the playoffs is it just shows the growth that we've made, or the forward that we've made this season. So, yeah, I'd like to say that we're still, our aspiration is still go for it. We've got nothing to lose. But if we fall short, which is looking likely that we will do, it's not really going to dampen our spirits. So I think we're in a good first step of the project.
I don't know if everybody else agrees, but someone said to me on Saturday that when it comes to sort of next season, there could be a lot of movement in leagues for different clubs due to the fact that there seems to be a lot of Isthmian-based area teams sitting at the top of the Essex Senior League, sitting at the top of Scaffold, sitting at the bottom of the National League South, etc. etc. And there could be a lot of it could be sort of over heavy going into into the Isthmian. Are you on the do you know if you're on the borderline of maybe going into the Southern League, say the Isthmian South Central, or do you think Sevenoaks are quite comfortable in that East Division?
I mean, if I'm honest, I've never actually looked at the geography, so it would have to be more of a professional guess or a professional assessment. As far as I know, the history of the club has always been part of the Kent region, Southeast region. So I'll imagine if there were to be movements, there'll be movements elsewhere. But if it turns out that we are picked as a side that could be moved, we'll embrace every challenge and we'll just prepare accordingly. But as far as I know, the Sevenoaks starting the Kent League and they progressed into the Scaffold League as it is now. So I'll imagine there'll be other clubs that move beside before us. But if that be the case, then we'll just plan accordingly.
Yeah, because the reason I asked that because I was talking to the Wolf Rugby manager as well, and he's they're in the playoff positions at the moment for in the Isthmian North, and of course he's saying to me, he said if we get promoted or don't get promoted, we don't know if we could end up because of the amount coming down and coming up, and he said we could easily be moved straight back into the Southern League because they were in the Southern League last year, Isthmian the year before, so this seems to be like backwards and forwards, which of course causes him issues about. Players coming in, especially if they get promoted or if they stay there, players that might want to go that way rather than going down that way. Do you know what I mean? So it makes it difficult.
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of if we were to move away from the Southeast region, I think it would definitely have an impact on us. Most of my playing knowledge is in the region where we are now. So, I'm not sure how that would impact me. It's something I've not actually considered, but I'd like to think that we probably wouldn't be touched. I can't imagine us moving away when historically we've always been part of Southeast or Kent or Scaffold. So, I'm reasonably confident we'll stay put.
I mean, just looking at some of your results in the last few weeks, you've on a good unbeaten run. I mean, looking back, the last time you got beat was 8th of February against Three Bridges. And since then, 1-1 Herne Bay, 2-2 Enbridge, and then 4-3 against Stenning Town, 4-0 against Littlehampton, 2-0 against Eastbourne, 2-0 against Lancing, 3-1 against East Grinstead, 2-2 against Ashford. And then you've got Margate coming to you at the weekend.
Yeah, good tester. Yeah, Margate's a good side. We played them actually in January. They were unbeaten at the time at home, and we played them probably at the wrong time for them at the right time for us, and we had a positive result there. So now we're getting into this game. We have our rights to be confident, and we certainly wouldn't take it lightly just because we managed to get 3 points the last time around. I think they're a big club. They probably shouldn't be at our level in terms of their history. They've got a good side together, good management team. I know the management team very well. It's just a side that's built to win games of football. So we're expecting a tough game. But again, we've got nothing to lose. We're excited by the challenge ahead, and we'll give it a go.
And sitting top of the form table as well, 16 from 6.
Yeah, we've had a good run. Yeah, we've had a good recent run. Yeah, we've had a good recent run in the last game. Probably you'd argue that the teams that we've played have been within our area in the league. So we've just made the most out of the opportunity playing the teams in and around us.
I love the way you tried to work out to make it didn't sound. You're trying to work out what the word should be. What should I say? But no, I mean, tell us a little bit, people that don't know, tell us a little bit about Sevenoaks and, a bit, little bit about the club. And, have we got sort of reserve sides there and ladies teams in there? I mean, tell us a little bit about, some of the players you've got, your team itself and, a little bit around the club itself.
Yeah, well, it's surprisingly enough, and another thing that I didn't know before I joined the club, it's one of the biggest clubs in Kent in terms of the youth players. So we've got over 1,000 players to represent. So that's starting from wheelchair football, starting from girls football, all the way to the senior football in terms of the ladies, as well as from under fives all the way up to the first team for the boys, just like most teams do. We've had a really successful season in the women's side. Our girls, the first team won their league. Our current under-18s are competing for the league as well. So we're having some reasonably good success at the moment at the clubs. It's a progressive club. It's a very heavy community-based club. We've got great facilities. We've got a 3G pitch. So everything is just built around our area. And we've got a really exciting project coming forward. We're hoping to start there very soon. Where we're getting a multi-million pound building build around the stadium, which includes changing rooms, stand. So it's just the club, just and Verges have taken it to the next step. And for us as the first team, we've got the ambition that we kind of want to match the facilities that's going to come our way by taking the club, hopefully, within that 3 year period that we've spoken about to step three. I think it's a good geography in terms of the territory where it is to recruit players, the facilities that we have, and the facilities that potentially be built. Make Sevenoaks a really exciting club to be part of in terms of as a manager, but also for the players to come in.
So we're having a sort of a really good under-18s team as well in there. I mean, do you often get down to see their games just to see if there's any sort of prospects to come in, especially at this sort of time now that the transfer window's sort of slammed shut, and if anything happens, which we hope doesn't, but if you think it happens, it does happen, unfortunately. Is there players you look at, in your under-18s, and do they train with you as well? Do you get to see a lot of them?
Yeah, absolutely. So we train alongside the ladies' first team in our reserves. We also have a reserve team. Under-18s train a different night, but we've watched them. And funny enough, in the last since we've started this run, we've had three under-18s on the bench for the last 8 games. Because our under-18s are a good side and they're the good local players, we've had a lot of success bringing these under-18s. And we've had six train with us, and three that made first team regular first team appearances. So. Yeah, having a successful under-18s program has been a real backing for the first team this year.
I mean, with that, I could ask Craig the same sort of question. Do you actually get to a stage where you've got sort of your youth teams underneath? Do you get them to play the same way as the first team? So that if something happens, they will slip in quite easily, and it's not going to be, don't know if you've got the left back and whatever, however you play, do you get the under 18s and reserves to play the same way so that it's an easy sort of transition for them?
To be honest, I think because we play quite a modern football, and I think most of the youth teams now, wherever you go and watch, they all play a similar style from the back, looking to develop players' technique. No, we don't have that sort of system where every team plays like the first team. When I go and watch the under-18s, I'm predominantly looking at technically, are they able, physically, are they able, and do they have those anaerobic attributes that I like in players to have? And the ones that we've picked, they fit the bill. And then the under-18s management team go and coach and manage however they see fit. But it's not necessarily that the systems that align, but more than the attributes that the players have.
I mean, with it yourself, though, I mean, at the beginning of the season, was it, when you sat down and had that sort of pre-season sort of chat with Paul, I mean, what was your aims for the season? I mean, was the aims for the season to maybe beat the points that you got last year, get into the playoffs automatic? I mean, because you've got some really big sides in there in the likes of, Sittingbourne and Ramsgate and, as you say, Margate, and then, even Mersham come down from the division above. So, I mean, do you look at that at the beginning of the season and think, well, look, maybe that's where, we should be looking for at the end of the season?
The club is, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years, it was historically known to be very ambitious in terms of the players they recruited and the investment that went in to make the playoffs and hope and get promoted. So this year, the club's direction was slightly different. Parts of the budget that's been in previous years was reduced to save for the cost of the building. So I think when we started during the interview process, Paul explained that this year they're just looking to stay in the league. And they explained the reason why the budget had been reduced. For me, that didn't really dampen my enthusiasm. It's the facilities and the project that the pool sold to me. So for this year, we were just looking to stay in league, really. So anything beyond that was just an added bonus. And it helped that we recruited reasonably well. And then as the season gone on, we went on to recruit a bit better and better and better. And we had a bit of luck on the way as well, a bit of hard work and a lot of things aligned for us together to be in a situation where we never really worried about relegation. Instead, we just focused on, or we were very enthusiastic about seeing where the project takes us. And I'd like to think that this year has been a very successful year for us.
But tell us about, some of the players you've got playing for you. I mean, we can see, you're 10 points off there, but how has that season gone for you? Has it gone in the way that you wanted it to go? And have you managed to get everybody through the door that you wanted as well?
I think you'll never. I don't think you'll ever get every player that you want to. But in terms of the changing room that we've created and the style of play that we play throughout the season, I would definitely say that we're there or thereabouts. It's been a great season for us, but at the same time, I do think that there were opportunities to be in a slightly better position than we are to make those playoffs, and I think that would have made a really good story for us. But we've still got plenty of years left within our project, and I genuinely believe that within next year or the year after, they will be slightly stronger and probably in a better position next year to compete for those playoffs. The things I've noticed the most this year is if we look at the likes of Ramsgate and Burgess Hill, so these are the two teams that we aspire to be like, or the difference between us and them. In terms of head to head, the team that we've got, the boys, the players, we can compete with these teams quite comfortably in head to head situations. The only difference I'd say is they're a little bit more consistent than us. And there's been games where we slipped up, and say that my team has the potential to be as good as Ramsgate players or the Ramsgate team, whereas the Ramsgate has those already established players, and because they have those already established players, that's how they get the consistency. And then for us to get to that level is we probably need 1 or 2 more years together to go through the routines, the coaching routines, the disciplines, the psychological development of the players, that they know what it requires to win games after games after games after games, rather than win, draw, lose. So we definitely have the quality, I'd say, to compete with anybody in our league, but we don't have that. We have the potential. We don't have quite ready the we're not psychologically ready enough to go to every game, turn up and win every game like the likes of Sittingbourne, Burgess Hill and Ramsgate have done.
Well, I'm just looking at that table, and you're just saying about that. I mean, It's incredible. Five games to go, and Ramsgate are only a point off of 100. I mean, it's just unreal, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. So obviously they're in a position, they've recruited already established players, but from vast majority of us, we're recruiting players that have the potential to be as good. And I think for our players to get to that level is they need a couple of years of discipline, routines, the experience, building that psychology of turning up to certain games where you perhaps things are not going your way, but learning how to get to your way. So yeah, that's what I say to our players. We've just got to be, we've got to be patient with one another and learn to build that discipline to build consistency.
So what's your squad like age-wise though? Have you got like a lot of youngsters in the side and then a couple of older heads, or have you got sort of, players with experience inside your squad?
So our average age is 23. So most of our players are between the age of 21 to 26. We've got a couple of over the age, but the reason why we've gone around this age is I do like the idea of keeping most of the players that we've got. It's obviously none of them are contracted, so it's very difficult, to be concrete. But an ambition of mine is to start next season with six, seven, up to 10 of our current players. We started this season with one player from the previous year. Initially, I'd like to start with, up to 10 players. I do think there'd be a stability and that consistency of players in the starting 11 will get us where we want to get to.
So, question for all of you, I suppose. How difficult is it? I do ask this question quite a lot to different managers that come on. How difficult is it when that last game of the season, whether it's a successful last game of the season or it's just a dead rubber game of the season, whatever it might be, and I don't know how you do it, if you have like another week where you see the players and then they all disappear. How difficult is it then, even though they've all turned around and said to you, "Don't worry, Marcel. Don't worry, Craig. Don't worry, Paul. I'll be back at the first training session on June, whatever else." Even somebody, say with your experience, Craig, are you still in that situation where you think, "Oh, I've called him a couple of times and I've done this and I've done that. You've heard this rumor that." How confident are you that those players that have said they're definitely coming back are going to walk through that door and come into that change room on that first training session for the new season?
About 1%. I remember my first year in management, we'd done a double. Ironically, Robbie was playing for me, our chairman, and we won the London Senior Cup, which was phenomenal for a club of our size, won the league, and we had a weekend away in Liverpool, which was absolutely incredible. And we come back on a minibus, got in a car park. And the players were hugging each other. It was like in tears. And they said, "This is just a bit, it was this is just the beginning. Next year we march on, blah, blah, blah." I think about 75% of them were gone. And that's it can happen like that. They get offers, they get deluded, they try their luck at levels, perhaps. A lot of them, to be fair, over the years, I've had players that have, and fair play to them, they go and try their luck at probably a division or two that they're where they're not going to get enough games on, and they're not going to play, but I have a go, and they end up coming back. And one thing I've had so many players over the years that have played for me for like 4, 5, 6 years, some longer than that. Some have spent virtual their whole careers with me, but I wouldn't put any faith in it. And the other thing is as well, probably of all the professions in life, footballers are the worst liars on earth. They will get away with anything they can. But no, for instance, we've got a great set of lads. I'd like to think they'd all be back, but if they get an opportunity to further their career, because like Marcel, we haven't got contracted players. If they get an offer from two divisions above, or they get that opportunity to go and try out for them, they'll take it, and you don't blame them. And then there's the other side, the financial side, that if teams come in and we couldn't compete with it, they're gonna have a good look at it. But you like, like Marcel said, you'd like to keep the core of your side for the next season. But that can be dependent on so many things. I mean, for instance, what division we're in, and then I'm sure it's the same for Marcel. I know it's going to be an uphill battle, but if they were to do it, he'd have to be looking at things slightly differently than if he was still in the same division. And the same goes for us. And Yeah, so, but really and truly, I just concentrate on this season and then get to work virtually as soon as the season finishes on what we need for the following season and who we're going to keep. But unless you've got them tied down, I wouldn't saw any faith in necessary player stand. Unless it's someone who's been with you for a few years and they're basically it's going to take an incredible offer to get them away, that type of player.
Are
So.
you surprised though with these with some of the players? I know most of the time the sort of as people have said to me, money talks. But sometimes, if say for instance, Sevenoaks get promoted, get into the playoffs, get promoted into step three, Barking get promoted through the playoffs and get into step three, are you then surprised?
That'd be something.
Oh, sorry, step four. Sorry, mate. Yeah, you jumped to the leg. Yeah, that's how good's that. But you know what I'm trying to say? If you get into those sort of steps. Are you surprised then that the players then walk away and not think, well, we've had success with this side. Let's just see how it goes. I mean, you look at Romford, for instance, last year, win the FA Vars and the whole team disintegrates. Do you know what I mean? So are you surprised that they don't stay to see what they can do? Maybe even if it's for the first couple of months of the season, to see if they can actually push through and get further up the echelon that way, rather than just going for the extra fiver.
A lot of the time it's more than a fiver. I know most of the Romford team went because of the money, and it's simple as that. They got better offers and then they've gone, so but well, well, the biggest thing, we always had really good dressing rooms in Port Otolohue, and they're a great set of lads, with really, really top set of lads, and that's they win your games on the pitch. And I'm sure that everyone who's there currently, and they enjoy the playing the football there. We play good football. We're very, very exciting, too exciting at times. It's a goal fest most games. And I'm sure that it'd be somewhere that if it was purely a football decision, they'd like to stay. But then you get the football decision where if they get the opportunity to play at a higher level, you can't knock it.
But Marcel, do you have a situation at this sort of time of the season? Do you get, and I asked Paul Houses last night, I asked Mark that as well. If you're getting close and there's that opportunity that you could get to playoffs or could get automatic or whatever else, do you look at it and think to yourself, maybe with your coaching team, go, well, this is what we might need if we're in step three. This is what we might need in step four. Do you have sort of two separate plans because you don't know what's going to happen? So do you have that sort of planned out, or do you just not worry about it until it actually happens?
Yeah, I think it depends what sort of competition you're looking to do in the league. So, for example, if you're looking to get promoted, you should be looking around step three players. They've got those technical attributes, those physiological attributes. So that's the sort of players you need to recruit. If you're looking to stay in a division, you can get a mixture of step four and top end step five players. So it depends on what the objective is. Just adding to Craig, I think when it comes to keeping players or recruiting players, sometimes I do think that the players do get a little bit of a, not all players just follow, the cliche of extra £5. Obviously, you create, one of the things I've learned is about the package you can create as a management team. So what's the coaching like as part of a package? What changing room are you creating for the players, the experience they've got in a changing room? Finance, what money you're offering, of course, and what step you're offering. So as long as you're always looking to bring those four areas within your package to players, I think you stand a good stead of retaining the players that you want, or at least recruiting the players that you want. You're not always going to get 100% right, but that's how we look to always address, create the right changing room. We have a reasonable budget. We have good facilities, like good coaching facilities, and ultimately we have an ambitious club. So as long as we work on creating that package for the players, anyone that's wants more, then obviously that filters out the players that are not right for you, really.
I mean, sort of moving over a little bit to Barking, but what's it like working with the legend above you there?
It's been good. In a short time that he's been with us, I've learned quite a lot. And when the appointment was made, chairman, the vice chairman said, if you stick about, you'll learn a lot from him. And I think they're definitely right with that.
Do you get players turning down, Craig?
Yeah, yeah. But never twice. But no, I mean, of course you do. Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. And obviously, coming from step three to step five, and there was a number of players that I knew as step three that wasn't getting games, and I thought they'd do a great job for us. And there must be about seven or eight, and I swear to God, they are so deluded. And they go to, and they're never going to kick a ball. I said, like a couple of them, I said, you've barely kicked a ball in the last two seasons. You're sitting on the bench here. I said, come and play your football. And he's the greatest example at our level from last year was Richard Conan. He goes and bangs in 30 goals for Athletic Newham. He's playing for Wickham now. He's top scorer in the division. Now he could have easily gone last year perhaps to a Conference South club, maybe sat on the bench. Sat on the bench. Wickham won a conference. Wickham could go to the conference and hit players who they want. Where did they go? They went Essex Senior because they've seen a player they think he'll do it for us because he's in there banging goals in at his level and now he's doing it at step one, at League One. And you think that the boy's got all the potential to go to the Premier Division. But he's done it playing football, not sitting on his backside watching games week in, week out. So, I've been turned down and sometimes and with me, it's a lot of how they do it. If they say no, I want to do this and blah blah blah, and they're straight up with it. Don't burn your bridges. Don't ever burn your bridges. Do things the right way. Be respectful. And if not every player wants going to want to come play for Barking, I get that. But if you're straight up with it, you never know what's down the road. We might be in, please God, step three in a few years, and then they might want to come back and play for you. But then you've got to look at what type of character they are. So do things the right way. Like I say, I mean, as I always say to players, there's thousands and thousands of players. There's very, very few clubs. So do things the right way, whether you come to us or go anywhere.
Paul, I mean, I'm looking at the fixtures you've got left, to try and sort of secure this playoff place. And you've got a bit of a nasty run in all fairness. I mean, Stansted at home, then you've got the FA Bars Champions, well, at home, but away. Then you've got Great Wakering Rovers who are chasing the playoffs. And then you've got Woodford Town chasing the league. I mean, it's a bit of a tough run in, but with the gaffer you've got, you'll probably win all four, won't you?
Well, I think the thing that we've had this season, we tend to raise our game and play better when we're playing the stronger sides. Whether it's a mentality thing that the players walk into the dressing room before the game, think, oh, we're playing teams down the bottom, we're going to walk this, and the teams are going to have the opposite view. Therefore, we're down here, up there. Let's ball their party. Let's and it's been like obviously West Essex, no disrespect to them. It was a game that we thought we could have won last week. We just never really got going. And even with Athletic Newham on Saturday, we made sort of difficult work of a game that could have been and should have been comfortable. But yeah, I think playing teams that are in form going in may actually favour us because the players won't be able to rest for a minute. They'll know they've got to work tirelessly for that 90 minutes to get the result. So hopefully we'll get as maximum points from that.
So here's the ultimate question, and I know what the answer will be from the man above, but is automatic promotion out of the window? Are you looking at playoffs?
I think realistically it's probably going to be playoffs, but I think we can only control what's in front of us. So if we go in and win our games, and then the other games go our way, that we could end up sort of pipping Stanway, then so be it. But we can only do what we can do. And it's just if everything else falls into place, then good. If it ends up being the playoffs, then we want to be as high up the table for the more sort of the home draws, if you like. And we'll just have to see what other teams do, but we can only control what we can do. So I think that's the main thing, is we just focus on us rather than worrying about what others can do.
Is it vital though, Craig, to get that home tie for the semi-finals?
Well, realistically, we the best we can hope for is fourth, I think. With the games that are left, the teams above us, the games they've got, we're as good as in the playoffs. I mean, we'd have to lose all four. Saprom Walden would have to win all four. That's the only way we're not going to make the playoffs. So you can say that we're going to make the playoffs. But I think it'd be between us and Wakering to finish fourth and fifth. The three teams above that, They'd have to drop too many points in the last four games for us to catch them. And Stanway's, it's just not going to happen. But as what Paul said, we have been better against a better team. I mean, what sticks in my mind, two of the best, or three, probably the three best games we've played since we've been there. And we have won most games. But we played Stanway, who lost the first game of the season. And I think we went something like 27 unbeaten. And we went over there and we were fantastic. And we beat them 3-1. And fully deserved it, and then Takeley at home, who I thought were a very strong side, and we beat them 2-1 in a really good game. But I thought we were terrific that night. And the other one was Erith Tan, and we beat Croydon and Erith from Marcel's division, and I think that division is the strongest step forward division in the country. I think it's a fantastic division, and we played Erith, and I thought they were a terrific side, but we were unbelievable on the night, and we won it 3-1, and I thought we deserved it. I mean, they started off really well, but we have done really well against the better teams we've played, and like Paul said, it's the games that really stick in your mind are the games where we think. I mean, I think it's the only one in the last eight we lost at West Essex. And it was a shocking game. There's no disrespect to them. I mean, defensively, they were fantastic. But there was three shots on target the whole game. We had two, and they had won a penalty. And it wasn't a great game at all. But fair play to them. They probably deserved it on the night. But we didn't turn up, and that was really disappointing because I thought that going into that game that we need to win every game and we've got a chance. But I thought that sort of killed, if you like, automatic promotion. But now we'd sort of got our mind set on the playoffs. We're in the semi-final of the London Cup, which is incredible, I think, for a team at our level. And it's been fantastic. But the boys have been great. The people at the club are great, and it's buzzing over there. So long may that continue.
Who've you got in the semi-final of the London Cup, Craig?
We've got a nice easy tie. We're away to Welling United or Brentford. Yeah, and the biggest,
Just
biggest.
peel the under 18s for that one.
Yeah. That's Brentford B, and they're doing well at their level. So they're going to be a really good side. Just purely from a selfish point of view, I would love it to be Brentford because obviously we get to that semi final, they're going to be massively tough games. Either one, we know that. But if it's Brentford, then they have to play at our place because we're drawn away. But if it's a pro side, you get the home draw.
All
So
right, okay.
that would be fantastic for the club to, win, lose or draw. To entertain Brentford in the semi-final of the London Cup would be fantastic for us. But they've got to get past Welling away, which is going to be tough. Yeah, either one of them is going to be a great draw for us, but Brentford, for a number of reasons, will be a preference.
So can I take you back then, Craig? I mean, how did it all come about? Because, out of all of a
I
sudden,
should miss you, mate.
bang, in you
But,
come.
well, what happened? I mean, as I was at Cheshunt for 7 years and loved virtually every day of it. And it was, we had unbridled success in amongst the two COVID years. We won the cup. We had a great run in a trophy that took us to Stockport, who ran away with the conference that year. We had back-to-back promotions, and then we went down from the conference, which in the last week of the season, which I think was the biggest achievement of the lot to take it that far. But then we had a really disappointing season, like in the Isthmian Prem. And then it didn't start off too well this year. And it got to the stage, Dave, where it was draining the life out of me, because things had got too personal. Because I was, there was I had loads of friends over there, the supporters became friends. I've gotten unbelievably well with Dean and Lee, the stuff. And when we got beat, honestly, for 2, 3 days, it absolutely wiped me out, and it was getting really personal. And I thought, and I pulled him aside. I said, "It's draining the life out of me." I said, "You need a change. and I need a break. And we and it was very emotional, the party. And yeah, so I left and I said to the missus, this was in October, and I said to the missus, look, I'm going to give it to December. If I haven't got the hunger for it, I'm going to I'll tag it in. And I've got in the first 2 weeks, I've got offered three jobs. When I had a chat with them, but it just didn't feel right, Dave. You know, yeah. Lovely people and everything else, but I thought it was still that thing I needed a break. And then Robbie rang me up out of the blue, and like I say, he was playing for me in my first season of managing, and that's how old I'm getting now. My ex player's a chairman now. I've gone over there, and the enthusiasm, he was just rubbing off of him, and you know, all the plans they got for the future. It was, you know, like Marcel said, you know, this big community thing. We got the 4G pitch as well, and there's kids everywhere, you know, playing. It's just a really great atmosphere over there, and so I've you know, I had a chat with him, and I thought, you know, I rang up James, you know, from Chesham, and I was telling him about, you know, the jobs that have been offered and that, and I got talking about Barking, and he said, oh, I can hear the enthusiasm back in your voice, Gap. He said, it's great to hear and everything. And I said, I rang up Robbie and I said, look, Rob, I'll have it. I'm going to take it. And then, you know, and I phoned the missus, told her, you know, and I was at the club, and I phoned her up and I said, and she said, well, I thought you were going to give it to Christmas. This was 2 weeks later. And I said, oh, no, I'm going to take it. And I sat, when I left the car park, 25 minutes later, I was sitting in my living room. And there's a lot to be said for that. You know, I mean, I've been going around that 25 for 27 years, you know, and getting home all sorts of hours, and it just felt right. And the difference is there, you know, thankfully we haven't lost many games, but when I lost a game in this season at Chesham, it drained, like I say, it drained me, it killed me. When I lose a game now at Barking, I'm angry. And I can't wait for the next session. I can't wait for the next game. And I'm just at it, you know. And I swear to God, and I spoke to Preston and James over there. I said, it's taken 10 years off me. I said, and I'm absolutely buzzing it, you know. And we've got a friendly tomorrow. I can't wait for it. It's like we've got, it's like, honestly, it's like it's a big league game for us tomorrow. I can't wait for it. And that's how I'm with every session, you know. And I've got good people around me. Paul, you know, he's great. He can't do enough. I've got Sam Edwards, who's like a player, who probably one of our better players, and he's gone into the coaching, like, as a player coach, and he's like I had with Mark Hughes, he's a good buffer between me and the players, you know. So it's all going really well. Everything's good, you know. The people behind the scenes, if you like, the chairman, the people that work at the club. All great people, you know, and it's just a pleasure to be there. And I'm full of enthusiasm, and please God, you know, we in the playoffs we can be nice if we could finish fourth, and if it was Waker and finishing fifth, that they win their semi final, because then we'd be at home. So, but they're all ifs and buts and maybes. But all I will say is I'm really enjoying it over there.
David, I'm just going to quickly just add a little bit to what Craig said there, because I really relate to his experience. From the previous title, from his previous club, where he was talking about you lose the game and then it really drains the life out of you. Whereas comparison to his environment now, I realize that's a lot to be said about the board and the chairman that you work with. Because I had a very similar experience last year, lose a game of football. And instead of using that as a time to reflect and improve, pressure and particularly the email sometimes and a message that followed after a defeat, it really created an environment where you as a manager can then reflect and improve, whereas this year has been completely different. So the experience and the skill of the board that you work with really can create an environment for a manager to protect you in terms of so they can get the best out of you. So it's always about said that the manager has to create the environment for the players, but there also needs to be a reflection on how the board deal with disappointments, how they work with the manager so the manager they can get the best out of the manager. Because I really relate it to Craig's story in comparison to two clubs there in his last year. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said about the people that you choose to work with.
I think I will say, to be fair to Chiz, and they were great. I mean, they were supportive all the way in. I mean, when I told him, he said, like, you know, Dean, he said, I couldn't imagine coming over here without you being here. And I remember there was one particular bad defeat we lost at home to Dulwich. And I was, and we were poor. We got, I think it was 3-1, we got beaten. And honestly, I was really, really down in the office. And I'm talking to the staff, I think it was Hugo and Curtis at the time, and we were on our knees. And the door, after about 45 minutes, the door opened. It's Lee and Dean out. We're trying drinks, and he said, "Come have a bit, like have a beer." He says, "You've been with us all through the success we've had. Now, you know, you lift yourself up because we go, you know, we'll stick with you through the bad times." And like Marcel said, that honestly, it meant so much, and it just give you that enthusiasm again. Go again, like really do well and push yourself on. And I've always thought it's easy to be a good chairman, a good, you know, good ball, good supporters when things are going well. But a true measure of any of a chairman, supporters, or anything is when things ain't going well. You know, that's when you get your real supporters, that's when you get your real chairman. And you know, So that's that I can really relate to what Marcel said.
I mean, it's funny what you're saying now. I mean, I'll be honest with you, the sort of same sort of time this time last year, I was starting to lose a bit of love for it all and question whether or not to do this and questioning whether to do that. And then got that sort of phone call to go over and do something a little bit for Romford in their semi-final in the bars. And I went over there and did that. And a bit like what you were just saying there, Craig, all of a sudden that you go back into it, and again, what Marcel was saying as well, your spirit's just lifted because everybody was thankful for you to be there and he's doing this and you're doing that. And then, you know, we did that for him. I did a load of staff interviews and filming the game for him, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, then you get that phone call, you know, from my personal opinion, probably the you know, one of the nicest men, especially one of the best chairmen that in the game for me, in Steve Gardner, you know, giving me a call, asking me to be their press officer at Wembley. Do you know what I mean? Which like was like, oh my God, what's going on here? You know, and he was a bit nervous about doing it, but he got there, and all of a sudden you got the same press pass as Alex Ferguson had the week after, and you're walking on the Wembley pitch, and you're walking around the stadium inside in the dressing room, and that he probably doesn't even know that, but the lift that gave you. You know, gave somebody like myself. You know, I'm 55 on you know next Wednesday. Do you know what I mean? But that lift for a 54-year-old bloke just going into Wembley and being able to do this and being able to do that really did give you that sort of lift to think, well, I'm going to carry on doing this because I do love it. But it's just that one spark that you need, you know, Craig.
And, you know, and it's always good to be around people that are positive people. You know, and that. Because and Marcel will know this, and Paul, you're going to have your bad days. You're going to have your bad times. You're going to have your bad runs, and you need to pull together. Mm. And that's when you're strong people, and you're what I think the real characters and the people that I've known over the years. You know, I've been lucky enough to have had what I think is a very successful career. But the amount of real good people I've had around me that have, you know, when you are down, you know, and things ain't going well, and you look at things, think, geez, you know, and you need everyone needs to give, you know, to be able to give people lifts. I mean, and I think that's a big part of a management, because with the players, you know, Marcel, I know that the players get down at times. You know, they'll have their bad runs, they'll have their bad form, and I think it's. A big part of your makeup, any player, whether it's in players at half time, when you talk to players at half time and you talk to them before the game, the players who are not playing, you know, it's so important to have them all on board and all working towards the same goal. Mm. And you know, thankfully, I mean, funny enough, I was talking to Sam on the way here when he was saying that he couldn't get in. And I said, how great our bench was on Saturday. And I've always really put the importance of a bench. If I've got a good bench, I've got a good side. I know that, and it's not just the ability of them. It was their attitude on Saturday. They're all disappointed. They all want to play. All probably a bit angry, but they were fantastic on the bench. The support they gave the players, everything else they got. And Paul will tell you that the amount of games we've had in the last 4 or 5 weeks where our subs have come on and changed the game for us has been phenomenal. And one player didn't get on Saturday, and he's come over to me at the end of the game. He's gone, get I said what he said, because we was all going in. He said, can I stay out and do some running? And they'll do their running anyway, but he wanted to do extra. And I thought it was fantastic. And he's not even got on, but he wants to be, he wants to be better. He wants to be in the side. And I thought, just their attitude was fantastic. And so you've all got to help each other in a team. That's why it's a team game. And I think it's that environment you get, it builds a better dressing room. You get a better dressing room, and you'll get people fight for each other on the pitch. And so.
I mean, I suppose two questions in one, really. I mean, and Marcel can answer one part of this as well. You get into this, get into that last game of the season, and you've already made it into the playoffs. If, well, I suppose it's a three-part question. One, the first part of the question is if you've made it into there before you play the last game, and of course you've got, is it Woodford, the last game, and you know that a lot is you've got to play them in the semi-final. Do you know what do you do? Second part to the question is if you get into those sort of semi-finals, do you have a goalkeeper on the bench? And I suppose same as the sort of first question, do you actually change? Do you give some of the squad players a game in that last game so that if you get an injury or whatever else, well, one, you don't want to get an injury, so you may
Yeah.
plan, but secondly, you've got somebody that can step in because they've had a game bit of game time.
Well, and Paul will tell this, and it's not just idle chat. I mean, it would obviously, firstly, it would depend on what we need. That it's always primarily is our first concern is what we need. Now, if we're already set and where we're going to finish. Then yeah, we will give people games, but it won't be. And there's not a player in my squad, and I swear this isn't messing about, Dave, that there's not one player in the group of boys we've got there. They're starting Saturday. I'm worried about. They're all good players, and I love good competition. I love honest competition, and there is a fair paper between them. And like I say, the amount of times in the last few weeks that players have come on. Change the game. It's not the same players because some platoons they come on, they do exceptionally well. You think he's got to start the next game, and he does. And then you bring on perhaps a boy who's been left out, and he comes up, and they've got the hunger because they want to be starters. So it can be any number of things. And plus, like I say, all our players are at the level that they're good enough to, with all due respect, to go and give Woodford a very, very good game. And I think. That you'd have to look at Woodford's position. If they're going to the league, if Stanway are going to the league, and it's dependent. I think you've got to respect the integrity of the competition, and try and win the game. So it's there's a number of things there. But no, and yeah, obviously, and it's with going week to week. I mean, that's 4 games away. The picture completely changes every week. How you're going to set up and how you're going to prepare for the Saturday. So it's too many variables to sort of think about what's going to happen 4 games along the line. But it
Keep
wouldn't be
on the
like
bench.
that. We haven't had a keeper on the bench, so I don't think that it would change. If we haven't got a keeper on the bench and got the big something happened to our keeper and he had to go off, we just have to go and win it 7-6, which ain't far out of what we've been doing lately anyway.
Well, so would you if he was in the semi final, would you put a keeper on the bench?
I traditionally always have a number two goalkeeper on the bench. Yeah, I always invest in two goalkeepers. I think the incident only has to happen once for it to cost the game. So yeah, I do always invest in a second goalkeeper. I tend to have a this year we've gone under 18s, but yeah, I do have a second goalkeeper on the bench.
Paul, this is going to sound as one of the last questions, and it's not a detrimental question in any way, shape, or form, but being part of the main man's management team, how difficult do you find it with his experience to sort of turn around and try and get an idea across to him to say, look, I think we should do it like this way, maybe not the way that he wants to do it? Is that an easy thing to do with somebody with Craig's experience?
I think, well, when he first came in, obviously he didn't know many of the players that we had. He hadn't worked with many of them, and he was quite leaning on me, saying, like, if I was to change this, bring on this player, how would it work, or who's best suited if I need to change this area of the pitch. And it was quite easy to sort of give my opinion, and he sometimes took it and maybe did what I suggest, and there might have been times where he took it on board but went a different way. But he's quite open to have a discussion, and if he wants to do it a different way, I think with the experience you can't really argue with what he wants to do because of how successful he has been. But yeah, he's a very approachable, and it's easy to kind of say, make suggestions, and whether he takes it or not. If he doesn't, it's not, it's not nothing personal because he wants to win the game.
I suppose, have you, how many times have you been to the wine bar?
Not yet, the players really know, but I could make it, but we'll be there soon probably.
We all went down there, was it a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a really good night. Ended up like they're all singing, all had to do their songs, get up on stage, have a sing. Yeah, so it was, yeah, it was really good.
Well, listen, guys, time's run away from us, unfortunately, because I've really enjoyed it. And I always do when you're on, Craig, as you know. But and Marcel, it's been fantastic having you on
Thank
and
you.
chatting. And hopefully we'll get to speak to you again very soon. Paul, fantastic having a chat with you as well, mate. And of course, the legend's just the legend. What can you do? Eh? The man with a magic touch. Listen, from everybody out there, a massive thank you for watching tonight. We'll be back actually now in 3 weeks' time. I'm away now for the next couple of weeks, but we'll be back in 3 weeks tonight. We'll be back for the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season as well. But from me, from Craig, Paul, and myself, thank you for watching. And don't forget, this week, of course, you'll get to see the second episode of Respect the Whistle. Of course, if you want to go and see the first episode where we talk about the law changes with the goalkeeping, we also talk about Mark Clattenburg's chat that he had on the overlap around throw-ins. And you also get to see a refereeing decision from the Merthyr Town versus Chertsey Town game, which, of course, Martin has a good look at and he gives his opinion. And believe it or not, he actually agreed with the referee in the game. But go and have a look at it and see what you think as well. 6 minutes in against the league leaders and you get a penalty, but the keeper didn't get sent off. He got a yellow card. No double jeopardy. Double jeopardy didn't happen there. So there we go. But go and watch that. But the second episode, that'll be out on Friday night. We record it tomorrow. But if you've got any videos whatsoever of games with refereeing decisions, good and bad, then make sure you send them in to respectthewhistle@gmail.com. And we will get Martin to have a good look at them, and you'll get to see him on the show in the coming weeks. But for, as I said, from me, from Craig, from Paul, and Marcel, thanks for watching, and good night.